Please be seated. It took me the longest time this week to figure out why this thing kept coming to my mind when I was trying to prepare a sermon, because it didn't make sense. It didn't fit. And this thing that I'm talking about is this vestment that I'm wearing, this alb. I don't wear this very often. In fact, I hardly ever wear it at all, even though I think it's beautiful and it has special meaning for me. It was made by a dear woman in Huntsville, a member of the parish that we were sent to seminary from, named Lucy Cotton. And Lucy, I guess you can tell, is a pretty good seamstress. She can sew or embroider just about anything, and she does that with her small business. And I was in seminary, and she called me to ask me if I would be willing to be a model or a guinea pig, I don't know, for her. She was going to a conference at Canooga about how to make clergy vestments, and she wanted to know if I would be her subject for a class that she was taking about how to make an alb. Well, of course, I was willing to do that. At that point in time in seminary, I didn't even have any vestments. And besides, I knew anything that was going to be made by Lucy would be extraordinary. And I think it is. But the whole process was pretty extensive. I know that this lacy stuff, Edith Brown is going to laugh at me, but this lacy stuff has a name, and I can't remember what it's called. But it's supposed to be really hard to do. And I think Lucy told me that the material is Egyptian linen, and I don't know what that is, but I'm guessing that that's pretty special as well. And I had to make several trips to Lucy's house for fittings and adjustments and alterations and pinning stuff up and all that, to get it to Lucy's standards. And she finished this about the time I was getting ready to graduate from seminary. And I was to be ordained in my home parish, Lucy's parish. So I thought it would be a good thing if I wore this for my ordination service. Well, Lucy was thrilled by that. But it also meant I had to make a few more trips back to her house to have more alterations and adjustments done. And I know that she spent a whole lot of time ironing and steaming this, because evidently Egyptian linen wrinkles pretty badly. Lucy got it perfect, and she gave it to me. She gave me some pretty specific instructions about how to keep it perfect. And I tried. I really did try. But evidently Egyptian linen wrinkles if you look at it. And by the time I processed down the aisle that night for my ordination service, this vestment looked like I had slept in it, kind of like it does now. It looked like I had slept in it, and I was mortified because I felt like I had let Lucy down. But it was all I had, and I had to go with it, so I just did. And then over time, I mean, it's got a pretty gross sweat stain in the neck, and I've spilled wine on it a couple of times, and it's not anything like it was when Lucy gave it to me. She gave me this perfect gift, and just a short time in my hands, it became imperfect and wrinkled, and it's always wrinkled, and it's always flawed, and it's always not perfect. It's just not perfect. It's blemished. And as I look back on that time now, I kind of laugh about it, because I realize how perfect a metaphor that was for me being ordained a priest. I wasn't being ordained a priest because I was perfect, far from it, anything but. Anybody that knows me will tell you that. I wasn't being ordained a priest because of me. I was being ordained a priest in spite of me, a wrinkled, blemished, flawed, imperfect child of God. And I guess that's why I kept thinking about this week, because I also think that's a pretty good metaphor for this world that we love and the world that God so loved that he gave his only begotten son. Undoubtedly, John 3:16 is the first verse that any of us memorized from the Bible, right? Everybody knows it. We memorize John 3:16 because it's an important verse. Martin Luther said it was the gospel in a nutshell, that God is ultimately and fundamentally a God of love, always has been, always will be, that love is the logic by which the kingdom of God is run, and that when you have questions, love always wins. The love of God always trumps everything, no matter what. And I do realize that not all of us read this text that way. There is a whole lot of condemnation and judgment in these few verses. There's that part about whoever believes in me, which of course implies a different outcome for those who don't believe. And I've always wondered if it wouldn't have been better for us as children to have learned the next verse along with it. To have learned the verse that follows, the verse that says that the Son of Man didn't come into the world to condemn the world, but that the world through him might be saved. But I realize that doesn't fit on a sign or a bumper sticker quite as easily, and I'm afraid that we've chosen to reduce this text into something it does. But it's important to remember that this text is a conversation. It's a conversation that Jesus is having with Nicodemus. And as far as we know, Nicodemus was a great guy. He was a Pharisee. He was a religious person. He was probably a person of privilege and entitlement, but he was trying to do the right thing. But he was a person that was so disturbed by his intrigue with Jesus that he came to him in the dark of night so nobody would see him. And Nicodemus is trying to understand justifiably what Jesus means by being born again. And Jesus is trying to explain to him about God's love. And Nicodemus, I think, is struggling with all this because he's only known God's love and grace when it's been connected to God's laws. He's spent so much time being caught up in the rules and regulations of God as taught by the Pharisees that for so long had pointed to what it means to be saved, that maybe Jesus needed to explain to him that it all begins with love. That it all begins with love. For God so loved the world. And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. Not to condemn us, but to experience life with us and through us. This imperfect, wrinkled, flawed, and blemished world that we are, to share with us in all of our frustrations and our disappointments and all of our struggles and our joys and our hopes in relationship with us as we're called into relationship with each other. Nicodemus, I think, needed to be reminded of that love, that love came first. And it is a love that is so tenacious that it really does chase after us. It tries so hard to hold on to us and promises to redeem us no matter what and no matter whether we like it or not. It is a love that is so unconditional that we are left powerless, but that's a good thing because it means we can't screw it up. And it is a love that is so intense that it cannot merely be saved as a reward for a life well lived. But it is the love of God and the light of salvation that I believe God yearns to share with us even now, even today. No matter how imperfect, wrinkled, flawed, and blemished we might be. And as far as all that judgment stuff and condemnation, I'm okay letting God handle that. Because God is God. And I'm not. And you're not either. And for me,